Kika Somenzini, a true icon in the world of hair modeling, has not only pushed the boundaries of aerobatics, but redefined the very limits of what can be achieved in disguise. With a career spanning decades, Kika's journey reads like a symphony of flight, innovation, and passion for aviation. His accolades speak volumes. A four-time Tournament of Champions winner, an F3A world champion, an XFC champion, Kika stands as one of the most accomplished aerobatic pilots in RC history. But Kika's contributions go way beyond his piloting skills. He also has a life worth of experience designing airplanes and working with brands like Horizon Hobby, JR, or OS Engines to develop the best RC products, and is the founder and owner of Flex Innovations. In this interview, Kika provides a fascinating insight into his pioneering of 3D maneuvers during his preparation for the Tournament of Champions, and shares how he trained for the world premier competitions. Additionally, we also dive into his design process at Flex, and talk about his latest creation, the Twin Otter. But that's not all. Kike shares with us his invaluable advice for aspiring pilots, distilling his years of experience into precious nuggets of wisdom that can elevate anyone's flying skills. Hey, Kike. Thank you so much for being with us today and dealing with our tech problems.
Not a problem. How are you, Juan?
Good, good. Hey, it's really exciting having you here. I've been following you, I don't know, for the past like 15 years, since I got into aerobatics, you were a major inspiration. So it's really, really cool being able to get to chat with you.
Oh, thank you.
You were the one starting 3D itself. So I'm really curious to hear how things got started with those initial 3D maneuvers.
Yeah, well, I will make it short. You know, it's a long path. Everything has a natural path to get that result, but making short and quickly, that was a long time ago, many years ago. And you know, the first time that it was shown to public was in TOC 1994. Always is that debate about, you know, what 3D is. Some people consider torque rolling being a 3D. I always say no, that is not. Because, you know, back in, I don't know, 1967 or something like that, the PITS Model 12 PITS S2 full scale, they were doing, you know, torque roll, no, hovering, falling down, no power, but those guys, they were doing it. So I don't think that torque rolling or hovering is what is 3D. 3D is flying post-stalling. So, you know, nose up, and you go totally opposite of what it was years ago. It's nose up, more nose up and add power. Years ago it was nose up, no, release elevator, add power to get out of there. So that is what 3D is. And that's basically what it opened the door to everything that it was post-stall after, you know, many years of evolution. It follows what is it today, many of us are doing. So, it was mainly the trying to figure it out how that can be done. And it was always a dream and try the way to first to have the power to do it and then understanding how. And, you know, now after many years, it looks simple, but, you know, the control surfaces were a big key. And that's one of the first thing was, you know, making a bigger elevator and on the airplane and then start seeing things. But pretty much, you know, from going from not 3D to 3D, it was pretty much overnight, I call it, because it was back in 94, practicing with it was a new rule that we had by then, where the airplanes were bigger than 2,300 square inches, you could qualify for a bonus, a point bonus of 1%. So it was very, very good to try to attempt flying a bigger airplanes. So we have our bigger airplane. It was a modified Bolt Godfrey by then, extra 300S. With my dad, we worked together on this. And, flying that airplane, it was totally different than any other airplane we flew before, having all kind of problems. Okay, we're not getting that path of all the problems we had, just trying to figure out the power in the servos, adding servos and things that now are very normal, but by then they were not. But anyway, flying the airplane, start getting a feel of this. What is the airplane is kind of happy in the stall condition. So I told, basically, I told my dad, we need, I think if we do like the free fly models and we get the stack with more, and I think if I add power there, I think Mike can control it. So Dad and I built new stab on the extra 300, and a few days after install it, and it was magic. That was in the area kind of born. And then from there, everything is built. And then it was public when we went back. We went to Las Vegas back in 1994, and everybody saw it. But, you know, that's the short condensed when and how that happened.
I can imagine in the TOC, in that TOC, all the pilots, all the competitors coming and look at your plane very carefully and being pretty surprised about the size of the surfaces.
Yes, yes. It was all the tail, you know. Then, you know, after we did this, we keep modifying and basically we end up doing the tail of the airplane, not the ailerons, because that required a new wing and we didn't have time. Then for the next TOC, we add the ailerons and, you know, started hairy rolls because, you know, the ailerons were not big enough. But yes, everybody kind of watched, especially after that flew it one time. You know, there in Vegas, you go and practice in the dry lake pretty much by, you know, yourself. We did like for a week or 10 days there. Nobody saw us flying. And so when actually the first time everybody saw was that first flight. And it was pretty significant, the impact it has in everybody, because it was a new thing, you know, and a very, very big departure of what it was before. So, yeah.
Did you envision back then 3D becoming where it is today? Like it's a whole type of flying, so many new maneuvers.
No, no. At that age and that experience, no, no, not at all. For me, it was, and for us, with my dad, it was more like trying to find that edge to win. You know, that's all it counts. You don't have, you're not thinking something else than that. Now, when you look back, it was kind of shaping what is today. Yes, no question. But by then, it was just trying to win.
Were you using that same airplane for both precision and freestyle?
Oh, yes. That was part of the rule, and it always was a TOC. And that's where the real challenge is, because you got to fly, you know, with long servo arms and the CG. You know, you can adjust CG, right, moving things around. But overall, it was a compromise, you know, trying to get the best in freestyle and the best for precision. But that was a good challenge, you know. I really like, I think that's, if today we have a contest, that's probably one thing it should be mandatory, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely it's my favorite format too. Like single plane, have to go, precision, unknowns, freestyle. It's a very complete pilot.
Exactly. It's the pilot and it's the machine, you know, the aircraft. The aircraft got to do it all.
Has to be good at everything.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Did you ever have problems with servos? I imagine that back then servos weren't prepared for like those type of big surfaces.
Oh my gosh, no. I think we flew the first time we flew the extra 300 was analog servos by then, of course. And, you know, the holding power was, I can't remember the numbers, but very, very small. So we figured out from the go that one servo on the rudder will not do it. So let's put two. That was like, I don't remember one of the numbers, but probably we're looking at 150 ounces for two servos tandem. I don't know, it was kind of a very small number. And we flew the airplane. I think it held up for about one flight, and then the servos broke. And so we ended up flying with four servos and more power servos, but we have four, three in the wings and four on the elevator. The other interesting thing, that airplane, you will not believe this, like numbers, like the airplane weighs 21 kilos. So that's what, 43 pounds, 44 pounds. That was the weight. And it's 120 cc. Okay. So today, we're flying, what, 30 pounds or 28 pounds? And even the 120 cc is not 120 cc power we have by then. So it was incredible. All when you compare today, and you know, that show you how much the technology and the knowledge and everything has improved. It was tremendous, tremendous. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting how we're always doing this thing where the pilot is always pushing the boundary of the equipment, right? Like the equipment has improved drastically. And still today we feel like sometimes servos are not strong enough sometimes. Like sometimes they wear out because we're just asking out of the servos more than we used to. So it's always like a good like balance, trying to get both pushing each other's capabilities forward.
And then, you know, in years to come, we will be talking the same way because, you know, what will be in a few years, we will look back to today and say, you remember we're using these weak servos or this airplane so heavy? Because it's like you say, it's the pilot and the vision that a pilot has. Like in this case, it's Jace. You know, Jace is the new person, the new kind of flying. He creates something different. His vision is carrying it's moving a lot of elements around, you know, his aircraft, his servos, engines, props, everything is kind of driving that new way, as it was years ago. I did it with the 3D, another group of people too, and the TOC. You know, the TOC was very special because genuinely, it was a group of person, you know, we all invited there for that contest and we all worked very hard, you know, every one of us did something to improve what is today technology. You can't say, okay, this person did it all or did the most. I think each of us did a little bit and contribute to what is today. But today, times are different and, you know, there are not that kind of competition, and it's more about, you know, shows and pushing the limits in a different way because, you know, we already made that change from the traditional flight to the 3D flight. And now it's, you know, in this case of Jace, it pushed the 3D style to the next level, more like a XA right now today. So yes, absolutely. The pilot is, to your point, the pilot is the one that it push the limits. Yeah, remember when the airplanes were not ARF, you know, ARF didn't exist, so the airplanes were hand-built. We hand-built all the airplanes. Were, you know, in the case of many years with that, we built a scratch build, and then we got some kits from Bulgari that modified, but we're talking a bag with sticks that you had to build from nothing. And then you have rules that are changing every TOC. You receive an envelope through the mail, okay, no emails or those things. So I received the envelope, and it's a new rule. And the rules, the changes were very aggressive changes going, like I just told you, you know, before. We flew one size of airplane where the limit was 70cc and this size of airplane. And then the next TOC, which is you receive the invitation, you know, you have 15 or 16 months to build an airplane and adapt everything to that rule. And then all these new maneuvers are coming in that package. So today, it would be fantastic if we could have something like that. The prestige, it really felt like, you know, like big sports that you see, you know. Like you say, the money was a factor, but also where it was, the hotel that organized the event, and all the people around the world going there and watch. And so I wish it. You know, I consider myself extremely, extremely fortunate to compete in that TOC and be part of the TOC. You know, you have other classes like F3A that I also put a lot of effort on that. But when you compare the two, they are different. But I think the impact of the TOC is in that short period of time, it was very, very great, very big. you know, the F3A is a very old class that over years developed in a way to what is today, but kind of based on always the same kind of flying style, you know, more difficult, more challenging maneuvers and things like that. But the TOC kind of brought the freestyle, brought music, brought, you know, jazz care airplane, gas engines and all that. So very, very fortunate to be part of that group that, you know, compete and I helped to develop what we had today.
So you've won many top competitions, TOC included, F3A World Championships, Tucson Robotics Surot, and others. How was the preparation different for these different events? Like you were talking about how the TOC was really special. I imagine that F3A Worlds must be really tough competition too, with a lot of practice and preparation beforehand, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, the F3A is mainly about, you know, very, very consistent. You have to be very consistent. And once you reach a level where you are a contender for winning, then you, what is the difficult thing to achieve is that consistency. So every time you go and fly, you fly the best you can to your very best performance, counted equipment and counted you as a pilot. World Championships, you know, it's a truly world championship. You're looking at, you know, 30 countries. I don't know what is today. I'm not following much, but, you know, a lot of countries around the world and the top three pilots best that they qualify to go there. So it's a very genuine world championships. And at that level, obviously you find incredible pilots, you know, just like when you go there, you can feel it. So the preparation for that is very, very hard. And you have to prepare your equipment and get yourself mentally prepared for all the conditions that you are going to go. So one, you know, when you go to World Championships, there is different challenges, like, you know, you flying in the different country, you know, probably different weather that what you've been flying and experiencing. And there is a lot of logistic around, you know, you go to a new country, you got to rent a car, trying to find flying fields, and you start, you know, meeting many different people around the world, different languages and things. So you really feel that, you know, you are participating in something special. And the equipment is like in any other contest, is so important, making sure that, you know, it's working, but also is performing to that very, very edge. You know, the best engine, the best airplanes, props and everything to deliver that performance. And then the other part I was saying at the beginning is be consistent. So every flight and, you know, World Championships, you do one flight a day. You're waiting all day long, depending on your draw for starting order. But many times you're waiting for hours for that single flight of 8 to 10 minutes. So you got to be perfect that time that it comes. And then it goes into move, you know, as the contest progress goes into the finals, where it reaches the peak of, you know, unknowns and challenging, the most challenging F programs to fly, that's, you know, that's where, you know, a finals and a world championship, this feels very, very similar to a finals and the TOC. Any competition at that level with that caliber of pilots in the final, it requires absolutely 100% of you and your equipment. So that's the driver of any natural competitor, human being. You know, that's the pinnacles of what you want to be part of it. So, yeah, a lot of preparation, Juan, for any of these contests. Then you have, you know, Tucson Shootout. XFC was Don Low Masters. I participated on those. All they were very, very challenging too. The same kind of preparation, you know. We're looking at hundreds of flights to get it right.
Do you miss competing?
No anymore. My last contest was back in 2009. Mentally, I say no more. And yeah, I'm pretty happy where I am.
You got a lot of it. You got a lot of it and you did really well.
Yeah. I flew from, I was my first world championship. I was 12 and I stopped competing in what I was like 42 or 43 years old. So I had like 30 years, like nonstop competition. So enough for me.
So switching gears, about 10 years ago, you founded Flex Innovations. Can you tell us about the beginnings of Flex, what your original vision for the company was, and how was it different also from your previous company, the Kickers Aircraft?
Yeah, Kickers Aircraft Company was mainly wood airplanes, a kind of an ARF. We were kind of that group of the first companies doing ARF here in U.S. I think it was Airworks and Extreme Flight and Kiki's Aircraft Company. They were kind of the three here in U.S. Then outside was like Seba, Sebastiano. In Europe, that was kind of the core companies doing the first ARF. Then it became more other brands shortly after joined. But yes, and then with Flex Innovations, it was more more experience with not only dealing with gas power, but also with electric airplanes and foam airplanes. And it was the main spirit, the core of foundation is to have fun. Different than the pure competition, I drew myself for competition, as I say, for 30 years or so. And also I recognize that there is most of the people in our hobby, they do it for fun. It's not about competition. It's a very, very small number. So that's kind of the foundation of the company. And then have a little bit of everything, diversity, having foam airplanes, sport airplanes, aerobatic airplanes, jets and wood and composite and all kind of materials, different prices. So trying to be broad in that mean, but at the end of the day, the core spirit of the company is a fun product, good performance, always, that's kind of the DNA, call it, of our company's performance. We, even if it's for fun, the airplane got a delivery, you had to be. So our airplanes are going to be light, obviously. The weight is very important. And they got good power, very important as part of the fun. And then try to build them as best as possible, which when you go a mass production, always there are challenges and get all of them exactly the same. But and along with this is Aura, which was from the day one, we have Aura in the product. Aura has been for us a big success, and it's kind of a big, it's a big part of our thinking of about having fun, So, that's kind of, it's very different than what it was before with Kickers Aircraft Company, just for the fact that, this is more about for the customers and to have fun, for them so they can have fun.
How did Aura come into the picture?
It's a natural progression, when I was at Horizon, I worked there for a few years, and we experiment there, airplanes having no gyro and airplanes having gyros, and you could see right away the tremendous impact that it has on the customers, how much enjoyment customer has with the gyro. Airplanes that were you could see it on reflected on sales, and airplanes that did not have a gyro and then they add the gyro, like ultra-micro airplanes, you could see the jump. It was, the sale was not like double, it was like 10 times more, so it's just a big number. So it's because people want to have fun, and that's what it is. So from day one, we're very lucky to have Joe Birch. He's with us from the go. He's our engineer, and he's, you know, I can have all kind of ideas and everything, but Joe, at the end of the day, is the one that did it. But always we work very close with the concept of our Aura is not just a gyro, it's a flight controller. That's very important. And that's the important part, because you get a PMP. Our PMP is, you know, everything set up, you know, your rates, your mix. They say, why is this airplane flying 9 feet so straight? Well, it's a good design, but also there is some mix there that we, you know, we set up. And then you would have all these fly modes, the radio system, the Aura will talk to all the radio brands, which has been also a core thing for us. Like, we want to make friendly our airplanes for all brands, not just one specific brand. So you pick one of our super PMP, you link, and then you are going to fly the airplane exactly in the same conditions that I personally tune the airplane. So it will experience the same. You say, okay, it feels the same way, your expos, your rates, your mix. So that's what Aura brings. And I think that's kind of the number one thing, because through the Aura, we will be able to do things like, you know, crawl, biplanes with crow, we, you know, so many different, you know, light wing flaps and ailerons, a couple have the flaps from the Aura, all this, that if you think about it, imagine if those PMP didn't have the Aura. So how you do that? First, you need a very expensive transmitter, right? You're not going to do it with a 6-channel radio. Second, who's going to program that? I mean, you need hours of a video tutorial how to do it, and then still, you know, the fine tune of it, you know, the amount of mix you need for elevator, for the flaps. When the crow deploy, you need a mix, you need, you know, your expos and everything that you're going to get with the Aura. So the number one thing on Aura is that flight control. And then, you know, on top of that, you put the gyro, which, you know, it helps tremendously for the fun factor. You know, it gets windy, the airplane doesn't bounce around so much, and especially when you get smaller in size. The airplane gets bigger. It's by itself, I call the bigger it gets, it's like a gyro effect. It's the same. When you fly a 200cc airplane, it probably feels like, you know, I'm flying a 50cc gas airplane with the Aura. That's how it feels, kind of your experience with this too. So this is kind of why from the go, we thought of the Aura. And I could say, you know, as today, that, you know, it was good. It was a good decision. And it opened options too, you know, because I always say this, the most important is to have options. You know, that's why our system talks to all our radios. So pilots, of course, customer has options, so they can choose the radio they like. You can have your different ways to fly your Aura. You can have a gyro off, you know, and you have still having the controller. You can choose not to use the Aura too, you know, like we do with our ARF, you know. So the option that we brought to the customer is a very good option, and many are taking it. And so, you know, that's kind of the core idea on the Aura. Yes.
I wanted to ask you about your design process. How did you go from have this idea to the point where you have the airplane in the hands of your customers? Are you able to talk a bit about that?
Yeah. I don't know how to describe. It's in the meaning of how the idea happens. You know, I think it's just kind of your brain process what they see and what the brain see, what you think, and then kind of spark an idea. The idea could be different kind of airplanes, and it could be different kind of shapes. But that's kind of the core of everything else. So that's what, you know, that's how the RV8 was born, and you know how the Cessna was born, or the Mamba was born. So I don't have like a fully explanation what's that process to one night, one morning, get up and say, I do this. I just don't know. Okay. So that's one part. But once you have that, then that's when the experience will tell you where it will be first, what size, you know, and what material. Once you define those two, then it's time to say, the vendor, you choose factory, who's going to do this. And then you kind of get that definition, and then you go to the computer and start drawing the airplane. And then once you have your outline and sizes and everything you want, then you start looking at the structure. You know, if it's going to be good, you know, you work on the structure, and then and then basically that's how you move it from there. And then it's a continuous communication with the factory to get to the point, all these drawings, to the point that they're ready to be executed. You know, in case of the foam airplanes, there's a lot of 3D drawing, you know, SolidWorks, basically, to get it, you know, shapes. And also there is a lot of molding that you had to think about how you are going to mold things and how the parts are going to be molded. And then understand about, you know, plastics, and understand about the foam itself and how you can save weight, and you know, all that process. It takes, a lot back and forth with the factory. And then one day, you feel like factory also feels like, okay, we're ready to produce a prototype. You know, in case of the foam airplanes, you basically you are going to CNC a foam airplane. So you imagine you take a block of foam, and then you're going to milling with your drawings, going to milling all the parts, and trying to emulate best possible what it was going to be production. So there is a lot of things there happening. Like weight is a big factor. You know, you need to know what, because it's a different kind of foam that you're going to use for that process than the foam that you're going to use. You know, one is EPS, similar to the cooler. You know, you go buy in 7-Eleven. That's the material. And then that's for CNC. And then there are different densities and kind of bead size and things that you need to make good call on what you want. And then milling all that out. And then basically you want to get an airplane that is pretty close. You go out there and start flying and look for changes and everything. And then one day you feel it, like you're ready for the mold. That process. You have to say this, it takes pretty much everything you know, because there is a lot of thing happening during this. And then it's the design of the airplane itself, you know, airfoils that you choose, you know, center of gravity is always the biggest challenge, you know, no matter what other people will tell, the CG is the biggest challenge, because you have, especially now that where all our batteries are so light and the foam airplanes, is everything is kind of rigid. There is not much of things move around. And so center of gravity is one of the challenges. Then you have all the electronics, you know, you have the servos and the ACs, the motors that we also do all that part. And so it's a big process. And but, you know, in general, from the time you start with the idea until you see it kind of arrive to our warehouse and it's ready to ship, you know, a foam airplane, you're looking at, you know, 14 to 18 months or something like that. that's the time and the, you know, require a lot of work. And then, you know, you, in our case, we have all these different sizes of airplanes and different kind of airplanes. So you have a constant movement of many, many projects at the same time. So as we're growing, we added more airplanes. And one thing that our company has been very successful, and I call that good success, is our very first airplane, it was the QQ Extra 300, still today one of our best sellers, and all the others. So we are not putting away airplanes because they perform, people like it. So our line is growing, and because we keep adding. So, and we try to keep them up to date, G2s with generation 2, generation 3, try to keep it, you know, the best. When we see something and we see, we take note, the customer also has always good ideas. We hear and say, you know, we take notes. When our note gets minimal, let's do a G2, you know, because there is something that we can improve. So always, always aiming to do the best we can. That's the guarantee.
Yeah, it seems definitely like it's a very long, hard process to get an airplane to the market. Speaking of, very recently you released the new Twin Otter. Can you talk about that one? That looks like a really different, really fun airplane.
Yes, it's a fun airplane. I really enjoy flying the Twin Otter, and you know, the spirit of the Twin Otter is to experience you know, what a twin motor would fly as a sport airplane, and how good is the airplane flying slow, and how clean actually it flies in precision aerobatics. You can, Juan, you can do a very nice 8-point rolls with that twin otter. So it feels great. And then, you know, on top of that, we add the differential thrust, like it brings another element for the aerobatics, but always is with the spirit of trying to explore and expand the most possible the flight envelope. So imagine you're flying an RV-860. That's what the Twin Otter is. That's kind of flying is similar, but then you add another element, which is the differential thrust. So, and that's what I think the success of airplanes is always about, the flight envelope. Wider it is, more customers will enjoy it, because it becomes an airplane for everybody. And that's what I like about the Twin Otter. It flies slow, it's very forgiving, takeoff very slow, and also it has really good punch, good power, good top speed, good flight time, and you know, it will do very good basic 3D. And so it's a lot of fun. It sounds good too, you know, just the twin, it sounds good. And it operates with one battery, you know, 16200 6S. So it's simple and to operate. And, you know, I think wider you get the envelope, you know, all depends on how you want to fly. You know, I imagine customers will just want to fly as a sport. Others will like to do more crazy things with it. Others would like to have floats with it. So that's what the Twin Otter is. The Twin Otter is pure fun, really wide flying envelope, and that's why I think the enjoyment and the joy when you fly, it reflects all these elements. You know, it just make it really fun. I personally have a lot of fun with it.
I bet. I can imagine that plane being pretty successful. I think what you said about it being pretty similar concept as the RV, in the sense that it's a sport plane, pretty approachable for any level, but then you can do some 3D, you can do some interesting things with the differential motor, right? Those flips that I've seen you do looks like really, really fun.
Yeah, and the aura, you know, it's a big factor on this. It's kind of the heart of this. You know, you have, you're operating this with a very low-end radio. You don't need a crazy radio to do all these mixes that it has. And, you know, you have crow, you have the flaps, you have the light wing, you have the differential thrust, and you have gain also in the differential thrust. So you imagine you were in a high alpha like this, and then you have your right motor and your left motor are with gain. So you're doing this hairy around, it's so locked in, it's just so fun to fly. And then when you park it and go for a hover, counter-rotating prop, so there is no torque. So the airplane is super stable. So the Aura, it's a very big element in this airplane because it put together all these thoughts that we have, and you know, with the help of Joe, I pretty much say, Joe, will be, can we do this? And we try, and then go and test. And so Aura is very important for the Twin Otter, definitely. But I expect, the Twin Otter to be a pretty important project and product for Flex Innovation. I will agree with you.
It's also, on top of the fun factor, I think it's also really cool to see something a bit different. I think, I love aerobatics. I love 3D extreme aerobatics. But we have a lot of extras, edges, the same type of planes. I think it's pretty uncommon to see a twin otter in general. And if on top of it you make it fun and easy to fly, it's even more interesting.
And it's a good size airplane too. You know, it's 90 inches and it's a big, for a foam, it's big. The other day we were taking some pictures and you put it next to the, 35%. It's smaller, obviously, but you can see the size, it's just kind of good size. And, the other thing is you put it together very quickly, so if you're going to spend hours and hours building the airplane, which is also an important factor. And all the batteries you're using on your RV860 or your Cap or your Mamba 60, the same batteries won't work on this airplane. So, they are marching very well. They are in production right now, building every day. We in contact with the factory. I do a lot of, kind of FaceTime and checking everything. It's moving along very well. So I'm hoping we are going to have it here during the fall as we've been advertising.
Jace Ducia, one of the best freestyle pilots in the world right now, recently joined the Flex team. What are you the most excited about working with him and having him in the team?
Oh, it's a good question. I'm very excited because I like to be on the edge. That's my DNA, always been like this from a kid that I started flying. So he's on the edge. Today, he is the edge. Everybody tried to emulate and tried to follow. And so I'm pretty excited to be part of it and be able to see my airplanes flying on that edge. Who will not be excited, right? So working with him is truly a pleasure. His knowledge about flying the field for the airplane is remarkable. You can expect nothing else than that from a person that is kind of setting the bar. So he knows exactly why everything, what is happening and the reason why. And so very, very hard worker. And you can tell he's gifted, obviously, but also he works very hard. So that's, as in any sport, anything that you do in life, to excel, to be the best and to get to reach that fine point at top, it requires two elements, gift and hard work. And that combined is very powerful. So I'm very, not only me, so the whole team at Flex, we're very honored to have him on board and looking forward to many things that we can do together.
As somebody that has been in the industry for a very long time on both sides, as a competition pilot and as a developer, designer, how do you feel about the state of RC these days? Are you feeling excited about it? Are you feeling worried? I know sometimes people tend to be very negative about, you know, FPVs, like changing RC airplanes or things like that. Do you feel optimistic about the industry?
I think the hobby, it has new branches, you know. Our branch is, it's about the looks, you know. We are not, FPV is totally different, you know. It's not the same. I remember when the drones came, some people say everybody will be flying drones now, but the drones, they all look the same, and it's not about, it's a different feel. For us, it's a lot about the looks. It's about presentation. Call it maneuvers, call it shapes of different things that we fly, the way they fly, but it's all around how it presents, how it looks, right? So the color schemes, the shapes of the airplanes, the maneuvers that we do. So I feel very, very good because it has been very stable for years. I don't see a path. I personally, I don't see a path of an explosion happening here to growth. I don't see a path to the future to finish or going down. I see stable, personally. I see it that way. So I think the hobby, in my opinion, is the future is stable. That's what I would say. And it has a path that it will not change. That's what I say before. It's all about presentation looks, and that it will continue to be the same way. If you look years ago, what we tried to achieve, and today what we try to achieve, it's very similar. I mean, I go 30 years ago, and when I was competing and doing everything, and I moved 20 years ago, I moved 10 years ago, I moved today, and I will move to the future. I was still about the same. Performance, looks, what we see, what we appreciate, what excites us, you know? What it make you to put the airplane on your car and go and fly, right? What excites you? It's that new model. It's about a new scheme. It's about a new setup. It's about, you know, the new maneuver you want to try, because that is the core. So there are other branches like, you know, FPV, there is drones, there is other things that might come in the future. But what we love to do, the crazy people that we are, it was still crazy, you know, for years to come. Same way. I don't see a change.
Do you have any final words of advice for somebody out there that is looking at you, looking at Jace, it's feeling inspired to improve their skills, whether it is in robotics or something else in RC? How to go about that? What's the best way for them to keep progressing as a pilot?
I think if you truly love what you do, probably follow your heart. That will be your main energy to go out there and practice, you know. Everything is all about practice when you want to be a pilot and exceed and be the best you can be, is practice and also put a lot of thoughts on it, you know. So there are things that happen when you compete, and improvements that actually are not the feel. They are because you're thinking all the time, you know. That's called passion. You got to be really passionate. You're crazy, okay? Very, very passionate about it. Think all the time about it. Practice and search for that edge, you know? Push yourself and do things that you don't like to do. For example, you don't like to roll to the right, but you prefer to roll to the left, just an example. Well, go to the field and do all the time right. Do the things that you don't like. Do the things that are hard for you, and do it all the time until it gets similar. Because it's like any other sport. There are preferences for we, the humans. You know, we like to do, you know, kick your ball. If you're a soccer player, kick it with left or right. You know, if you're a ballet dancer, you know, twist it left or right or whatever. Rolling airplanes is the same, you know. And so do that things that challenge you, and then become more, as I call it, symmetrical pilots. It's like any direction. That's kind of the foundation. So that would be my advice. Is try that if you want to become, you know, the best pilot that you could be, and then work very hard. And I think there is nobody out there that you could name, you know, top pilots that they haven't practiced. And try, and you have to try outside of the box, try new things too, because that's also part of what it made you to go to the field, to try those new things, you know, the way you set your airplane. Sometimes you have a routine, have a way to do it, but you have to be open mind, because always there is a setup that it will be interesting to try and might get you that little extra that you're looking for. So, yep, and be very passionate about what you do, and that would be my advice. And the other thing I had to say, like somebody is kind of starting to fly and want to make the progress through, you know, I think trying to fly more days than just try to fly one day a lot of flights. It's a very important, because let's see, for example, in a week, you go and do, you know, 3 flights a day. So that would be 15, right? 5 days, you go 15 flights. Let's say I can go on a weekend and I do 15 flights, right? But it's not the same. The 3 flights a day is going to be more. It will help you more, because in those nights in between, your brain, your ideas, you kind of organize. And then magically the next morning you go, it kind of happened better. It just, you make that progress. So that's another, I think, important advice, is try to get that quality of your flight improved by doing in several days. It's just try to condense in once. And also it's part of good for those guys that are learning the equipment and everything. You can do maintenance, kind of checking out things in between. It also helps to understand. And for the young kids, to really fly an airplane very well, you need to understand your equipment. You need to understand how things work. You can't be just a flight simulator and go and do it. You got to understand your equipment. I'm not saying that understand in depth, but at least have a knowledge of, you know, your engine, your servos, your equipment, setting up, and, you know, setting up your radio and those things. It has a tremendous impact on your flying skill. It's a combination. Setting up an airplane, I give you an example, it's similar. And when you compare to racing cars or any sport where there is a vehicle in between you, you know, I'm pretty sure that I'm a big fan of Formula One. And so I've been following years Formula One. And I know that, you know, those really top drivers, you know, you call it Senna, you call it Schumacher, you call it today, you know, Hamilton or Verstappen today, all those guys, they know the equipment. They're not just drivers. So they go, they say, they will talk to engineers and say, you know, this, you know, all these adjustments, all these settings. The airplane is very similar. So for those kids that are, you know, starting or very interested on, get interest on the equipment. That will make, and also, you know, in your path for life, you also learn something new. And who knows, maybe some of them are, you know, mechanical engineer or mechanics for airplanes and things like that. So that would be my advice. Sorry for the long one, but I think all these points Yeah, all these tips are, you know, if you take one of them, it will work. So take the most you can.
Well, thank Excellent. You so much, Kik, again, for taking the time. It was awesome chatting with you.
Okay, I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you very much.